Welcome to The Character Cure. I'm Dr. Paul Miller. Practical Wisdom, Part 1. One of the disciples of Confucius asked him what he thought of a man who was so cautious that he would think three times before acting. Confucius responded, "Twice is quite enough." Perhaps it was nothing more than lighthearted teasing, proving that Confucius had a sense of humor. But taking it seriously, he infers that thinking too much before acting can be just as harmful as not thinking enough. Sometimes thinking too much leads to overly cautious decisions based on narrow-minded self-interest. Ideally, our actions should flow more naturally as a consequence of our character. Our virtue for today, practical wisdom, has traditionally been known in the English-speaking world as prudence. Now, since the word prudence today implies an overly cautious, self-serving perspective, we might say it's characterized by thinking too much. We'll stick mostly with the term practical wisdom, since this virtue certainly can't be reduced to risk avoidance and self-interest. Let me warn that our philosophical discussion of practical wisdom will be a bit heavy and dense. It's a moral standard that comprehends a great deal in terms of taking personal responsibility for your actions, improving your awareness of people and events, and reasoning properly toward the best possible result. A shallow treatment of such a virtue just won't do. As we'll see, practical wisdom is the glue that holds a noble character together. Before we turn to Aristotle for formal definitions, let's start on a bit of a lighter note by proposing that practical wisdom is the wisdom of wizards, the embodiment of Gandalf or Dumbledore. Even if you're unfamiliar with Tolkien's Lord of the Rings or Rowling's Harry Potter series, you can appreciate the wisdom of their wizards. Consider Gandalf's advice to a discouraged Frodo, who's overcome with self-doubt and fear, wishing that he could go back in time and somehow avoid his heavy responsibility as the ring-bearer. He wishes that the ring had never been forged. After expressing empathy and understanding to Frodo, Gandalf offers his wisdom. "So do I, and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us." Later, Frodo is frightened by the loathsome creature Gollum, who Frodo learns has been guilty of horrible deeds. He wonders why Gandalf has allowed Gollum to live, knowing the creature is capable of almost any treachery in his desire to retrieve the ring. Here's Gandalf's reply. "Many that live deserve death, and some that die deserve life. Can you give it to them? Then do not be too eager to deal out death in judgment, for even the very wise cannot see all ends. I have not much hope that Gollum can be cured before he dies, but there is a chance of it, and he is bound up with the fate of the ring. My heart tells me that he has some part to play yet, for good or ill, before the end." Now a few short quotes from the wizard Dumbledore in Harry Potter. "Curiosity is not a sin, Harry, but we should exercise caution with our curiosity." And another, "It is not our abilities that show what we truly are. It is our choices." And one more, "We must all face the choice between what is right and what is easy." How many kids grow up wanting to have the wisdom of Dumbledore? Probably not very many. They may want the courage of Harry Potter or the loyalty and brilliance of Hermione, and they might want the magical powers of Dumbledore. But not enough kids seek his wisdom. As promoters of character education, one of our jobs is to move wisdom up on the list of desirable traits. Now we're ready for Aristotle's philosophical insights. In his Nicomachean Ethics, he uses the term phronesis to define practical wisdom as the ability to deliberate well about human action. It's much more than being able to follow black and white ethical rules, because the messiness of real life calls for perceptiveness and reflection. Thomas Aquinas follows Aristotle in saying practical wisdom is the right way of reasoning about things to be done. In classical ethics, practical wisdom is one of the four cardinal virtues, the other three being a refined sense of justice, self-mastery, and courage. Why do we say practical wisdom rather than simply wisdom? Well, it's because it extends beyond what's good in theory to what's good in reality or practice. Aristotle distinguishes phronesis, or practical wisdom, from sophia, which is a more theoretical or philosophical wisdom. Practical wisdom is about doing the right things in everyday life. You need to reason or deliberate in the right way toward the right ends. Aristotle says the moral virtues, such as courage, justice, and benevolence, define the proper ends of human behavior, and practical wisdom determines the means toward those ends. Practical wisdom is concerned with life as a whole, as well as life in all its particulars. It draws upon what we might call universal principles, but it knows that rules don't always apply and that sticky situations call for careful deliberation regarding what's to be done. Aristotle says young people can't have practical wisdom because it requires extensive experience with the realities of life, and young people, of course, don't have a lot of experience. To become a practically wise person, you have to immerse yourself in the world of people and things, gaining a keen understanding of both the limits and possibilities of human action. We're calling practical wisdom a character cornerstone because without it, your life will become fractured, unbalanced, and distorted in one way or another. In fact, it should be called the chief cornerstone. Now, you can't have practical wisdom that covers only a narrow swath of your life. You can't be practically wise when it comes to your personal health, and then unwise regarding family relationships. Practical wisdom is not a one-dimensional virtue. As we've said, it sees all aspects of your life and relationships as interconnected. And in fact, the moral virtues themselves are mutually dependent. Virtue theorists call this the unity of the virtues. Kindness, courage, and self-discipline all have to work harmoniously within a single personality. Meeting the demands of not just one, but all of the key virtues would seem to require an almost superhuman quality, and that quality is practical wisdom. This is why Aristotle says a practically wise person, by definition, possesses the other virtues. You can't have courage without practical wisdom, or practical wisdom without courage. Doing the right thing often requires courage. Another example, if you don't possess the virtue of self-control or self-mastery, your wisdom can be corrupted by an unbalanced desire for pleasure and other selfish pursuits. To take this point a bit further, some theologians suggest practical wisdom is the human equivalent of divine providence, which is God's ability to govern the entire universe through a perfect understanding of past, present, and future. Divine providence means that God chooses wisely when and how to intervene in human affairs. Now, the obvious difference here is that God is all-knowing and all-powerful, while you and I are not. But before we reject practical wisdom as a practical impossibility, let's continue. For Aristotle, virtue is also concerned with the emotions associated with human action. It's always about the whole person, emotion and reason, heart and mind. Virtue is about being inclined or disposed to do certain things because that's who you are, and who you are will always include emotions. While Aristotle emphasizes the central importance of a rational mind, he never implies that reason should be purified or stripped of all emotion. On the contrary, an important aspect of virtue is regulating your emotions. Some, such as spite and envy, are always bad, while most others, including anger and self-doubt, can be either good or bad, depending on the circumstance. To cultivate virtue, you need to train and master your feelings. Eventually, you can reach the point where you experience the right emotions at the right time. Let's take a step back now and examine more closely why Aristotle's practical wisdom is defined as an almost unreachable ideal, as the wisdom of wizards. It's sometimes called the executive virtue. To use a business analogy, practical wisdom is the CEO, the one that's in charge of making tough decisions and telling the other virtues how to get along. In the process, it keeps individual virtues from becoming too extreme. You may have heard of Aristotle's golden mean, which places most virtues somewhere between an excess and a deficiency. To use the most common example, true courage falls somewhere between cowardice, which is a deficiency, and recklessness, which is sort of like an excess of courage. More on Aristotle's golden mean later. Here's a silly but common example philosophers like to use in explaining the need for practical wisdom. Suppose your great Aunt Josie comes to your family dinner wearing a horrendously ugly hat. It makes her look, you think, like a ridiculous clown. Your aunt, who is normally a very sensible and socially conscious woman, asks you how you like the hat. At this point, you're torn between the demands of two virtues. Kindness would dictate that you respond with sensitivity and tact, but a strict standard of honesty would say, tell her the truth, without mincing words. Here's where practical wisdom comes into play. With practical wisdom, you would understand the demands of each virtue, observing this particular situation carefully, and reflecting on whether Aunt Josie can handle some playful teasing, as well as what's best for the family as a whole. You would then formulate a perceptive and appropriate response. You would realize that a fitting response to Aunt Josie might be inappropriate for someone else. You would also take into account your personal role within the family and whether you have a particular responsibility to establish the proper tone for others to follow. Other more serious and consequential scenarios pose a conflict between two or more virtues. For example, suppose you're living in Nazi-occupied territory near the beginning of World War II. You've allowed a Jewish family to hide in your attic to avoid being captured by the Gestapo. When a member of the secret police knocks on your door, he asks whether you're harboring any Jews. You could, of course, be perfectly honest and risk the lives of your Jewish friends. Or you could lie and then risk severe punishment on yourself and your family if the police decide to search your home. I'm sure you get the point of this scenario. Doing the right thing can require a fair amount of wisdom. In the case of the German police, it would also require an abundance of courage. In real life, the demands of one virtue often trump the demands of another, and sometimes you need to improvise or come up with a compromise between the two. Ethical rules, such as always tell the truth, are helpful, but because they often conflict with other rules, such as treat others how you would like to be treated, they need to be attended by good judgment, which can't always be reduced to a set of rules or principles. Unless you happen to be a real-life wizard, you're probably more like me, with a long way to go on the journey toward practical wisdom. So you simply have to start wherever you are on this path and move in the right direction, with a goal of becoming wiser than you are now. If you're willing to put in the time and effort, and you're committed to being patient with yourself and others, you can take the small steps that lead to wisdom. Some of these small steps can make a tremendous difference. When it comes to practical wisdom, we've seen that Aristotle prefers talking about the unity of the virtues, or virtue in its fullness. He knows that a person who has fully achieved a life of moral excellence possesses an inexhaustible reservoir of practical wisdom. But Aristotle is also willing to talk about how you can become practically wise. First, you need extensive experience in the real world with real people and real problems. This is why, he says, young people can be good mathematicians, but not good philosophers. Second, you need a firm grasp of the social roles and responsibilities that have come down to you as a parent, sibling, friend, citizen of a country, and a cooperative member of your local community. The rightness or wrongness of your actions depend to a large extent on your social context. Third, you need to be tutored and trained in developing good habits, habits that discipline both the mind and the body, keeping your emotions under control and training you to act rationally. Good habits create the foundation for any virtue, including practical wisdom. Ideally, you develop long-lasting habits while you're young, and your emotions and rationality become more and more refined as you get older. But no matter how old you are, you can change. You can achieve a greater measure of practical wisdom. In summary, we learn from Aristotle that achieving a life of virtue in its fullness can be elusive, especially if you're not consciously aware of the need to cultivate practical wisdom. You need to be more perceptive, with keen moral sensibilities about what a particular situation calls for. And often you need the capacity to deliberate about the demands of more than one virtue at the same time. You also need an active awareness of your interconnectedness with people and things. And you need to fully embrace your particular roles and responsibilities. Wise words and actions always reflect a clear sense of purpose within the messiness of real life. Next time, we'll turn to social science for insights into what practical wisdom looks like in today's society. Welcome back to The Character Cure. Practical Wisdom, Part 2. With Aristotle's moral vocabulary beginning to settle in your mind, let's explore what practical wisdom might look like in modern times. We'll attempt to reconcile Aristotle with recent social scientific studies. Before we move on to the 21st century, however, let's talk about a historical giant from the 19th century who possessed an abundance of practical wisdom. Few people would argue against calling President Abraham Lincoln the prime American example of practical wisdom or prudence. In a brief historical sketch, I'll draw heavily from a journal article written by Alan Guelzo in the January 2006 issue of First Things. Guelzo is one of the most widely respected scholars on the life of Abraham Lincoln. In the middle of the 19th century, when the term prudence didn't have the negative sense it has today, Lincoln was comfortable talking about his desire to cultivate this virtue in his political life. We all know that Lincoln was the American president who abolished slavery. But Guelzo points out that Lincoln was not an ethical absolutist who insisted on the immediate abolition of slavery out of principle. The end goal was the abolition of slavery in America, but discovery in the means of making this goal a reality required practical wisdom. In other words, while Lincoln himself was strongly opposed to slavery, he believed that the wisest course of action was legislative emancipation that respected the power of the individual states. In this effort, he intentionally chose to be guided by reason over passion. In order to preserve the Union, Lincoln was open to gradual emancipation, which was anathema to abolitionists who pushed for a more radical response to the evils of slavery. So Lincoln's actions to abolish slavery included both a military strategy and a legislative strategy. On the legislative side, he promoted the efforts of individual states that were willing to consider gradual abolition, assisted by compensation from the federal government to former slaveholders. When these legislative efforts stalled, Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation in the summer of 1862. This initiated his military strategy. But the legislative strategy continued, eventually resulting in the ratification of the 13th Amendment. Guelzo explains further that Lincoln understood and accepted the limits of his own wisdom. While he lacked the religious zeal of many of his contemporaries, Lincoln believed in the workings of providence. He didn't pretend to have a privileged understanding of God's mind and will, but his governing actions were at times tempered by a desire to wait for the developments of providence. In summary, Abraham Lincoln demonstrated practical wisdom through his embrace of reason over passion, his rejection of ethical absolutism, and through a calm and mature understanding that his own wisdom was limited. Now a few words of wisdom from Lincoln himself. 7 quotations taken from an inspiring little book by Jean Greissman, The Words Lincoln Lived By. The first 3 disclose how Lincoln's wisdom flowed from a clear sense of purpose in his life. Quote number 1. If we could first know where we are and whither we are going, we could then better judge what to do and how to do it. Number 2. Adhere to your purpose, and you will soon feel as well as you ever did. On the contrary, if you falter and give up, you will lose the power of keeping any resolution and will regret it all your life. Stick to your purpose. Number 3. Determine that the thing can and shall be done, and then we shall find the way. Quote 4 represents the homespun wisdom that comes with experience. I have found that when one is embarrassed, usually the shortest way to get through with it is to quit talking about it or thinking about it and go at something else. Number 5 shows how practical wisdom determines the means to the ends of virtue. I have an irrepressible desire to live till I can be assured that the world is a little better for my having lived in it. And the final 2 quotes use metaphorical language to describe Lincoln's ability to patiently deliberate over difficult questions before making a resolute decision to act. When I have a particular case in hand, I love to dig up the question by the roots and hold it up and dry it before the fires of the mind. And lastly, I am a slow walker, but I never walk back. With the wisdom of Lincoln as a backdrop, let's now move on to modern social science. 2 researchers at the University of Michigan, Neil Krause and David Hayward, have recently done some illuminating work in describing practical wisdom as a characteristic of real people. They propose a model to describe what a practically wise person looks like in today's society. In emphasizing the social nature of the virtues, they suggest that practical wisdom is associated with humility, forgiveness of others, compassion for both family members and strangers, the ability to provide emotional and tangible support to family members and strangers, and for religiously inclined people, gratitude to God. Krause and Hayward also show that hope and self-confidence are key characteristics that usually accompany practical wisdom. Beginning with self-confidence, they point out that society creates certain expectations regarding the development of virtues. Each one of us exercises our personal judgment in real life, resulting in varying degrees of success, either in meeting or failing to meet society's expectations. People who come closer to meeting society's expectations have greater self-confidence and feelings of self-worth than those who don't. To fully accept this explanation, of course, we would have to assume that each of us lives in a community where social norms consistently encourage noble character traits and virtuous actions. More on this point in a moment. So what about hope? Well, life naturally presents difficult problems. A practically wise person will successfully navigate these problems, thereby gaining greater confidence and hope that they have what it takes to solve similar problems in the future. Now, if you're looking for clear-cut, definitive results across the board, social science can be a tough row to hoe. Krause and Hayward do establish a statistically significant connection between hope and self-confidence on one hand, and their combined set of practical wisdom indicators on the other, such as the ability to forgive others and to provide emotional and physical support to family members and strangers. However, when their study isolated specific virtues that seemed to characterize a practically wise person and then tried to measure their direct relationship to both hope and self-confidence, they did not find a significant correlation. Well, this is what happens when we investigate an elusive characteristic like wisdom. Life is complicated. Modern culture is complicated. Real people are complicated. Being able to help a stranger, for instance, requires taking the time to understand his or her needs and possessing the means to address those needs. It makes sense that many hopeful, self-confident people lack the wisdom to provide emotional or tangible support to a stranger. Another possible explanation is that societal expectations sometimes clash with the demands of certain virtues. In other words, practical wisdom will sometimes call for actions that your community frowns upon. But if self-confidence is contingent upon meeting societal expectations, as Krause and Hayward argue, what happens to your confidence as a practically wise person when you choose to follow another path? It may very well be that practical wisdom in real life has to cope with the sort of self-doubt that follows unpopular decisions. In another study, Krause and Hayward begin by defining practical wisdom as concern with the important and difficult questions about the conduct and meaning of life that is tempered by an awareness of limits of knowledge and the uncertainties in life. Close quote. A common theme in wisdom literature is that you need to understand the limits of your knowledge and wisdom. Remember Gandalf's advice to Frodo that even the very wise cannot see all ends. Or consider the wisdom of Confucius. Shall I teach you what knowledge is? When you know a thing, to recognize that you know it. And when you do not know a thing, to recognize that you do not know it. This is knowledge. The ambitious nature of practical wisdom, as a vast and comprehensive assessment of what to do in a given set of circumstances, should help you realize that you're likely to fall short at times. And so you need to consult other perspectives. We all have blind spots that can only be discovered over time and overcome through interpersonal dialogue. This is why it makes sense for Krauss and Hayward to investigate the relationship between practical wisdom and religious communities. They show that for many people, church membership provides social and spiritual support, which includes mentoring in the habits and skills associated with wisdom. One thing I find interesting is that social scientists have generally discovered little evidence that practical wisdom increases with age. On the surface, this would seem to conflict with Aristotle's notion that only older people possess practical wisdom. My personal take on this finding is that cultivating wisdom requires work. It doesn't necessarily develop naturally as you get older. Once you've reached adulthood, you need to consciously cultivate the mental habits associated with practical wisdom. A second thought is that perhaps our society simply doesn't value practical wisdom as much anymore. Very often, we praise and honor the person who has achieved one-dimensional success. Athletes, actors, or business executives who've reached towering heights in their professional lives, but who are total wrecks in their personal or family lives. In the world of politics, we're often drawn to the candidate with a simple one-dimensional message, a single principle or a simple idea as the answer to all of our problems. Acknowledging and confronting the messiness and complexity of life can be much less appealing. Now let's move on to an enlightening study from a psychologist named Blaine Fowers at the University of Miami. In an article published in American Behavioral Scientist, Fowers takes an Aristotelian approach in describing three main aspects of practical wisdom: moral perception, deliberation, and choice. The first aspect is, I think, the most illuminating. Moral perception allows you both to see and to feel the relevant features of a particular situation so you can act appropriately. For example, when you encounter a situation that calls for compassion and a compassionate response, you'll feel and act accordingly because your moral perception is keen. As a wise person, you see the world differently from other people. You have a moral sensibility that others lack. The other two aspects of practical wisdom described by Fowers are a bit more obvious: deliberation and choice. In many cases, a morally perceptive person knows immediately what needs to be done. But in more difficult cases, keen moral perception still needs to be followed by serious reflection and then a difficult and deliberate choice. Fowers suggests that in your deliberation, you may find that a particular goal is no longer worth pursuing, especially if you're being forced to use inappropriate means to accomplish that goal. Sometimes, your plans must be put on hold, either temporarily or permanently, while you move on to other worthy goals. We'll conclude with a brief look at an article published in the Journal of Macro Marketing. Researchers David Mick and Thomas Bateman teach at the University of Virginia, and Richard Lutz is at the University of Florida. This article explores how practically wise business executives successfully navigate five wisdom paradoxes as they achieve balance in responding appropriately to the multidimensional needs of their businesses. Mick and his colleagues call the first wisdom paradox "know all, know little." They describe how executives have to know a lot to make wise decisions affecting their companies, but they must also recognize the limits of their knowledge. You need the self-confidence that comes with knowledge, but we all have blind spots that can only be overcome through engaging with perspectives different from our own. The next paradox is dive deep, fly high. What they mean here is that business executives need to immerse themselves in understanding and working with everyone who will be impacted by decisions. But they also realize that creative and wise solutions require time for solitary self-reflection. A wise business executive will be congenial and genuinely engaged in the day-to-day work of employees, customers, and business partners. However, she will also find quiet time alone to consider the moral implications of business choices. The now, not now wisdom paradox asserts that business managers typically feel a sense of urgency to be action-oriented in addressing problems. The secret is to develop enough prudential judgment to avoid rash decisions. The fourth wisdom paradox is complexify, simplify. Mick and his colleagues suggest that wise executives understand the inherent complexity of markets and other aspects of the business world. But sometimes a clear-sighted view of business calls for the ability to see beyond complex systems to the simple truths that impact real human lives. The final paradox described in the article is only me, no me. It affirms that wise business leaders accept the full weight of responsibility for decisions, while avoiding the tendency to micromanage based on an inflated ego. Wise leaders share both the responsibility and the credit for getting important things done. So this was just a small sampling of social scientific studies on practical wisdom. As a characteristic of real people, wisdom is difficult to define and difficult to measure. But we've gleaned a few helpful points. First, we've learned from Abraham Lincoln that wisdom flows from a clear understanding of your particular roles and responsibilities in society. While your role in society is likely not as clearly defined as President of the United States, your responsibilities are significant in your own sphere of influence. As you take those responsibilities seriously, you can cultivate the wisdom of Lincoln. Second, the wisdom of Lincoln manifests the need for flexibility, patience, and humility in following the dictates of reason over passion. Third, while practical wisdom is generally associated with a self-confident and hopeful outlook on life, it has to cope with self-doubt when noble actions conflict with societal expectations. Fourth, practically wise people recognize the limits of their knowledge and engage in dialogue with those who have different perspectives. Fifth, practical wisdom does not typically increase with age. It requires conscious and deliberate cultivation. Sixth, practical wisdom rests on a keen moral perception, which enables you to quickly discern the salient or most important features of a situation. Furthermore, the reality of that situation arouses within you the proper feelings or emotions regarding what ought to be done. Finally, we've learned that practically wise leaders adopt a balanced approach to solving problems by making allowance for opposing sides of what we might call wisdom paradoxes. Next time, we'll conclude our study of practical wisdom with some helpful tips on cultivating the executive virtue into your life. Welcome back to The Character Cure, Practical Wisdom, Part 3. Now let's conclude with some practical tips on cultivating practical wisdom. The first tip is to recognize that you make decisions within your social context. In other words, you make sense of what the virtues call for within your particular life to meet your personal responsibilities. This is what our podcast series is all about. Knowing what the virtues require of you. Is your life primarily about personal fulfillment, or is it even more about building your community and supporting your family? Character education is meant to answer questions like these. It helps you reflect on the deeply personal as well as the social nature of the virtues. Before you can cultivate greater practical wisdom, you need a firmly established sense of purpose in your life. You need an unyielding commitment to a range of virtues, but you also need to embrace roles and responsibilities as part of your personal identity. For instance, I'm a husband, a father, an active citizen of a liberal democracy, and in my vocation, I'm a passionate advocate for character education. These roles and responsibilities give my life purpose and direction. So as I strive to act wisely, I can ask myself, what would a benevolent father do in this situation? Or a courageous citizen? Or a rider who's working towards self-mastery? Tip number 2. Adopt wise criteria for making rational decisions. Once you understand the range of responsibilities you've embraced and the kind of life you're working toward, you need practical wisdom to get you there. Building upon the macro marketing study of wise business executives, let's identify some criteria for ensuring that you make rational decisions on how to act in your personal life. Number 1, you have to consider the needs of the present while anticipating the needs of the future. You don't have to look far to see examples of young people who have jeopardized their futures through the reckless pursuit of momentary thrills, or senior citizens who failed to fortify their physical and financial well-being during their more abundant younger years. Number 2, you should consider both the tangible and the intangible benefits of your actions. We might also say the material and the spiritual. In other words, what's best for the body and for the soul? True success consists of much more than the material comforts of life, which satisfy the needs of the body but not the soul. Among other things, nourishing the soul includes fostering a love of learning and nurturing close friendships. This brings us to number 3, considering both personal and interpersonal factors in your deliberation. Especially important in our overly individualistic society, your choices must strengthen your relationships as well as your personal well-being. In summary, then, balance the demands of the present while anticipating the needs of the future. Second, consider what's best for the body and for the soul. And finally, take into account both personal and interpersonal needs. Now, if you do your best to make choices that take each of these criteria into account, you can act with confidence, courage, and energy, no matter what other people think. Explicitly understanding the wisdom of your chosen course of action bolsters confidence and courage. With wisdom in the driver's seat, your passions and emotions fall into line, except, of course, when they don't. This brings up tip number 3. Regulate your emotions. Following strict criteria for making rational choices works well in an ideal world, but you and I don't live in an ideal world. You always have to start with where you are, which often means being trapped in a web of unhealthy relationships or struggling personally with negative emotions. But you work within your own life, no matter how imperfect. You embrace its challenges and opportunities. This means accepting the challenge of emotional regulation, training and controlling your feelings. Maintaining your composure in stressful social situations helps you avoid pressing other people's emotional triggers, making it easier for everyone to act rationally. The promise of a virtuous life is that you eventually experience pleasure toward the right things at the right time. You do things because they're reasonable, but also because you feel like doing them. This doesn't happen overnight, but as you train yourself in healthy mental habits, it does happen. You can't manufacture hope and self-confidence out of thin air, but you can develop simple mental habits that produce success and cultivate healthy emotions over time. A good example is dealing with anxiety. When you're overwhelmed with a negative emotion such as anxiety, you don't have the optimism and confidence to make wise choices. And the increased responsibility called for by practical wisdom can actually increase your level of anxiety and make you overly self-conscious, hesitant, and unnatural. It can lead to a lack of decisiveness and productivity in your life. This is obviously a problem. Remember, practical wisdom is the right way of reasoning and feeling about things to be done. It's about being a man or woman of action and good judgment. How can you act rationally with practical wisdom while you're experiencing the debilitating effects of anxiety? Well, it's next to impossible. For me personally, I've tried to cultivate a simple habit that diminishes my anxiety. I deliberately sort out my anxieties, between things I can control and things I can't. I actually write them down on a piece of paper. Then, for the things I can't control, I try to turn my anxiety into acceptance and serenity. Or I just try to stop thinking about them. One thing you have very little control over is what other people think about you. Now, this may not be true for everyone, but I find that when I'm experiencing a high level of anxiety, chances are that at least part of my problem is wasting energy worrying about how others perceive me. It's a burden that I just can't afford to carry. Sometimes I need the guidance and counsel of other people, but more often I need to trust my own judgment and move forward. As Jane Austen's heroine Fanny Price observes in Mansfield Park, we have all a better guide in ourselves if we would attend to it than any other person can be. So much for the things you can't control. For the things you can control, on the other hand, I personally find that anxiety, as a negative emotion, can be transformed without a lot of difficulty into excitement. While severe anxiety may require professional treatment, recent studies have proven that short-term anxiety can produce positive effects if you manage to channel it toward greater mental focus and energy. So when you're experiencing the negative effects of anxiety, relabel that anxiety as excitement about things you can control, and positive energy will gradually flow into your life. This is a true principle. We all waste a tremendous amount of energy on anxiety and distraction. Consider the assessment of William James, the father of modern psychology. Quote, "Everyone knows on any given day that there are energies slumbering in him which the incitements of that day do not call forth, but which he might display if these were greater. Most of us feel as if we lived habitually with a sort of cloud weighing on us, below our highest notch of clearness in discernment, sureness in reasoning, or firmness in deciding. Compared with what we ought to be, we are only half awake. Our fires are damped, our drafts are checked. We are making use of only a small part of our possible mental and physical resources." Close quote. Anxiety is just one of the negative emotions that you need to turn to positive effect. If you're like me, you consistently face the challenge of transforming your self-doubt into self-confidence, your fear into faith, and your anger into patience or compassion. Here again, practical wisdom is not about stripping yourself of all emotion. It's about channeling your emotions for good, being motivated by the right emotions in the right way at the right time. Now let's return to Aristotle for a fourth and final practical tip. Discover your personal golden mean. I briefly mentioned that practical wisdom is responsible for achieving the golden mean, or the happy medium with regard to moral virtues such as courage. The example I cited is that true courage falls somewhere between cowardice, which is a deficiency of courage, and recklessness, which is like an excess of courage. One thing I failed to discuss earlier is that Aristotle emphasizes that the golden mean is not an arithmetic mean. In other words, courage does not fall exactly in the middle between the two extremes, between the excess and the deficiency. On the contrary, the golden mean is relative. It depends on your personal strengths and weaknesses as a person who's acting. If you're trying to cultivate practical wisdom, you have to know yourself well. With regard to courage, if you know you're generally inclined to take the easy path and avoid taking a stand for what's right, your personal golden mean can only be found by pushing yourself in the opposite direction toward recklessness. If you have trouble exercising caution and you tend to act recklessly, you need to develop a habit of holding yourself back, compensating for your personal weakness and pushing in the direction of cowardice. Since practical wisdom is about making decisions and meeting the demands of a range of virtues in your life, it has to be built on the foundation of self-knowledge. For example, if you tend to lack self-control in your use of social media, you need to practice restricting your time online until you've achieved a higher level of self-mastery. If you tend to be a workaholic, you need to make a point of scheduling downtime for relaxation. One of the reasons practical wisdom is so difficult is that it demands penetrating self-awareness. In summary, we've discussed 4 practical tips for developing greater wisdom in your life. First, derive a robust sense of purpose from your roles and responsibilities. Second, use rational criteria in making your decisions. These criteria include balancing the needs of the present with the future, considering the needs of your body and the needs of your soul, and weighing both personal and interpersonal factors. The third practical tip is to train your emotions. Become more aware of the impact of negative emotions in your life and cultivate mental habits that convert these negative emotions into positive energy. Fourth, achieving your personal golden mean in relation to moral virtues requires knowing yourself well and accounting for areas of personal weakness. Now let's end with a personal challenge that begins wherever you are in the journey toward practical wisdom. I'm going to break the challenge into 3 steps. Number 1, choose a relationship in your life that's particularly challenging right now. It may be a family member or a coworker or a close friend. There's likely something about this relationship that regularly results in anxiety or discouragement. Number 2, use your own practical wisdom to determine what virtue is needed from you to improve your relationship. It could be honesty, kindness, patience, humility, or self-confidence. Number 3, put this virtue into practice in your relationship. Formulate a plan of action that expresses a virtue such as honesty, kindness, patience, humility, or self-confidence. Set aside any negative emotions and act rationally. Push yourself to say or do something that requires perceptive insight about the other person, something that you might not naturally be inclined to say or do. Then build on this moment. In conclusion, we now have a greater sense of how practical wisdom lays the foundation for your personal character development. Cultivating practical wisdom takes effort. We've seen from social scientific research that it doesn't just arrive naturally with age. But with focused effort, you can shape your reasoning and your emotions and foster a wiser, more perceptive, and balanced approach to your life's challenges. Recognizing the need for your personal golden mean, you can discover the wisdom of sages. Thanks for joining me. For more resources on character education, check out my website at charactercure.com.